proceed to the fourth case, Zupardi v. Walmart. Ms. Horsenick?
May it please the Court. I am Angel Horsenick, and I am here on behalf of the plaintiff appellant, Kristen Zupardi. Your Honors, we are here today to talk about whether a major retail establishment should be held to the definition of ordinary care that it defined for itself.
I'm sorry, I keep interrupting everyone today, but this is a diversity suit, so presumably you're alleging more than $75,000 in controversy. What injuries did she sustain from her fall?
When she fell backwards, Your Honor, and broke her fall with her right hand, injuring her wrist, and she's required two surgeries thus far and a lot of physical therapy and ongoing problems with that because she fell wrong.
Thank you.
As I was saying, Your Honors, we're here to talk about exactly that. When a major retail establishment enacts policies and procedures and fails to follow those policies and procedures, and as a result, a young woman is injured, she does injure her wrist, can we hold that major retail establishment for its failure to follow those policies and procedures?
You make much of the fact that Walmart's policies and procedure require employees to continuously monitor that action alley. But is it your contention that Walmart needs to have an employee on that aisle at all times, you know, without any breaks at all for performing other tasks, you know, just monitoring that action alley?
Yes and no, Your Honor.
What?
Yes and no.
Yes and no.
Yes. And here's why. The person best situated to determine what is reasonable and what is necessary and what should be required is Walmart itself. And it created policies that said when it's a high traffic time, we do need to be continuously monitoring this area of the store that is prone to hazard. And so in that regard, I would say yes. Now, I understand it is impractical to have one particular employee that would be in charge of doing that. You could rotate through. You could have people who are in the, it's an aisle, so if you're in different sections, you can have multiple employees that are sort of overseeing it in different fashions. And to be honest, I'm not sure the best way to do that. But fortunately, I don't have to tell them how to do that. They've enacted this policy for themselves. What I was going to note, and it seems that we've already passed this point, but just to make sure we're all on the same page, is that this case is not about the duty, the legal issue of duty. The parties agree, the law is clear, the defendants had the duty to exert reasonable efforts to maintain their store in a reasonably safe condition. What we're here to talk about is the fact issue of whether the defendant had notice of a 2-foot-wide puddle of water in its main aisle of its store. When analyzing that fact issue, it is important to note that Rule 56 and the case law that analyzes Rule 56 makes it clear that all evidence, all facts, all reasonable inferences should be drawn in favor of the non-moving party. So the question here today is there sufficient evidence such that a reasonable jury could find in favor of Kristen Zupardi on the issue of notice? And the way they can do that is the plaintiff, Kristen Zupardi, we would have to prove either that the defendant had actual notice or that the defendant, in the exercise of ordinary care, should have known of this 2-foot-wide puddle of water.
But you claimed in your brief that Walmart had a duty to ensure that an employee was, and I'm going to quote, passing or otherwise watching the spot where the puddle accumulated at all times without exception. I want to know where that idea came from. In other words, are you able to point to any legal standard of care that would support such a notion? Because it seems to me you'd have to have someone stationed at every aisle at every moment. And I just don't see that.
I definitely understand your question, Your Honor. The difference is that in this particular case, we are talking about an area of the store. If you can picture a Walmart or other actual major stores have similar setups, there's the four sort of main aisles, two going directly to the back and two crossing the other way. Those are the aisles that we're talking about. I understand that there would be a very different standard if we were talking about somewhere within the clothing department between clothing racks or something like that. I mean, we were talking about the main aisle. And not just the main aisle. We are talking about a particular part of the main aisle that was on concrete flooring and overlapping with the dairy department, both of which were supposed to be monitored even more closely than other areas in the store. And on top of all of that, the puddle was immediately next to doors that the defendant's employees would just have to be using on a regular basis to get to the back area to be able to do their job, aside and apart from complying with the continuous monitoring requirement that they'd set for himself.
But would they be the only people walking on that portion?
I don't understand the question, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
I mean, anyone passing might be walking on that part of the floor, right? Not just the employees. Was walking on that part of the floor.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Multiple people could be walking there, but my point was that because the employees of the defendant would be continuously going through that doorway anyways, it is reasonable that the employees should have and could have seen that puddle because that is the issue before the court, is whether the defendant should have known that that puddle was there. And part of looking at whether the defendant should have known, we have to come to an agreement as to what the definition of exercising ordinary care is. Because in order to decide whether they should have known about it in the exercise of ordinary care, we have to make that phrase a little less vague and hone in on it. And I cited a number of cases in my brief and reply brief which support that in situations ranging from hospitals to railroads, from school districts to police departments, there is ample legal authority from using a defendant's own policies and procedures to help define that standard of ordinary care. Because as I said, that is really the best way to determine what the standard of ordinary care is. Who could possibly be better situated to figure out what does need to be done than the major retail establishment itself?
In the lower court, the court just didn't think there was sufficient evidence. That's the basis for the conclusion, and applied that de novo standard. And other than your inference that it's Walmart's, that Walmart must have known that it was there because it's near the employee door, what other evidence was there of the water spill?
Your Honor, there was, the evidence of the spill itself we don't have much, frankly. I mean, and actually that's one of the concerns that we have. There is a missing investigation file, which the district court improperly drew inferences from in favor of the defendant, which should not have been done when we're analyzing the defendant's motion for summary judgment. The district court improperly concluded that the investigation file would not have had any helpful information in it anyway, so we shouldn't worry about it, to very paraphrase. But in viewing the facts in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, the defendant did admit that they followed their own policies and procedures with regards to the investigation that they were supposed to conduct into the incident, which means that there should have been this file that has statements of any and all employees from nearby areas, not just employees who necessarily saw Kristen fall, but nearby area to see when did you pass through the area last, that kind of information. A statement from the employee that Kristen had to go find after she fell and got herself back up. Video footage of the area, or if there wasn't video footage of the area itself available, video footage of the surrounding area so that you could see what would have been happening nearby. A determination as to the cause of the puddle itself, and a determination as to how long it had been on the ground.
Okay, so that's the investigation. So you're making the inference that there was some finding in the investigation?
Yes, Your Honor, because one of the requirements that the defendant set for itself in its own policies and procedures with regards to investigation was the manager was supposed to make determinations based on the evidence available immediately afterwards, which is obviously not available to anyone anymore, as to exactly the cause of the puddle and how long had been on the ground. And we will never, I suppose it could be disclosed at some point in the future, but to date we don't know what that investigation determinations were that would be discoverable, and that because the evidence is missing and there has been no reasonable explanation for the evidence to be missing been provided by the defendant, if we were allowed to proceed to a jury trial, we would have had the benefit of the missing evidence jury instruction, which would allow the jury to infer that fact that the pile is missing against the defendant, which means that not only is there evidence supporting our argument that the defendant had constructive notice based on its failure to follow its own policies and procedures, but you can really take that missing investigation file, if you infer it all the way, and determine that the defendant might have really had actual notice of this puddle and just had not done anything about it.
But in order to do that, you would have had the court would have had to find an intentional act on the part of the defendant to withhold that file, right?
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree. I think that would be the case if we had pursued a spoliation claim, and we purposely did not, because I would agree we don't have that claim.
So you think you can get that inference without a spoliation claim?
Yes, Your Honor. Under Illinois law, which because this is a diversity jurisdiction suit, we would be allowed afforded Illinois law, there is the pattern of jury instruction really sets it forth the best. It's 5.01 that says that if the jury finds that a reasonable person would have produced the evidence if it had been favorable to them, that the evidence was not equally available to both parties, and that no reasonable explanation for the missing evidence has been provided, then the jury can infer all of that evidence against the person who's not produced it, in this case the defendant. It doesn't require that I prove bad faith or that I prove anything other than that they have not offered some sort of reasonable explanation. And there is, I didn't elaborate on it, but there is case law that, analyzing that says that saying it's just missing is not sufficient to meet that burden. So we would be afforded that jury instruction, and the jury would be allowed to construe the evidence in favor of us, which means that when analyzing the defendant's motion for summary judgment, the district court should have done likewise. We should have been afforded the benefit of all inferences being construed in our favor.
So your inferences that are construed, you say it's water, and there's no water on any of the shelves, right? There's no evidence of like a leaky air conditioner or... What is your inference, your conclusion as to where the water came from?
Your Honor, I could guess as to where the water came from. I have argued that there is loose evidence that,
no problem,
that the employee that was restocking could have been restocking water because they were in an aisle, unclear because we don't have the statement which aisle, but that one of the possible aisles was the aisle where they stock water bottles. He would have had to cross over there if he was restocking water bottles, the area of the puddle, and there very well could have spilled it. The cause could have been a customer, frankly. I can't, as we're sitting here today, point to evidence in the record that says definitively it was caused by the defendant. What I'm saying is that we have plenty of evidence with regards to constructive notice, and that if you draw the inferences of the missing investigation file in favor of the plaintiff, that there is evidence of the defendant actually having actual notice.
But even if we agree that Walmart's internal policies are relevant in identifying the standard of care, what I'm having trouble with is how that would actually help you establish constructive notice. In other words, why would proving a violation of an internal policy give us any information about how long a puddle was on the floor?
That's an excellent question, Your Honor. The answer is that the uncontroverted evidence is that my client had to, well, she didn't have to, she entered the store and she walked all the way to the back of the store, straight down that main aisle, which I'm sure anyone can picture because we've all been in a Walmart, and that there were no employees in the area or anywhere in sight, and that there was no customers in the area where there turned out to be a puddle, unbeknownst to her, by the time she got there, which means that given the policy that requires continuous monitoring during this time period and in this particular zone, that should have been ample time if the defendant had been following their policies and procedures for the defendant to very well know about the hazard and take action.
But you're not saying that the policy of Walmart actually notes action alleys, are you?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, the policy very clearly talks about action alleys as being differentiated from any other part in the store because it's a particularly hazardous zone, and I've run up against my time. So I would respectfully request that this court reverse the rulings of the district court and remand for further proceedings. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Morrison. Mr. Ozak?
May it please the court. I'm not sure what the rules provide, but by way of full disclosure, I believe that Judge Kendall and I are enrolled in a class together.
I wish I knew what I was.
I think it's the spin class, Your Honor. And,
we do take a spinning class at lunchtime to stay healthy.
In any event, I'm not.
So you've been spinning together?
I don't want that to come up in deliberation without there being a recognition, and we've had no discussions, obviously, et cetera.
How can you while you're spinning?
I'm breathing too hard.
I'm here with Jennifer Radice, who authored the brief on behalf of Walmart. Let me address first the policy question.
Yeah.
Your Honor, you said, is there a policy that addresses specifically action alley?
Yeah.
This being Walmart, there is a policy that addresses practically everything and every aisle within the store. And specifically, there is a policy that talks about action alley. And the policy that plaintiff is trying to rest her entire case on says maintenance associates along with management need to monitor action alley continuously. It does not say you must be a hall monitor or assign a lifeguard to action alleys, but the way that policy applies in practice is if you are a maintenance associate or if you are a member of management, you can't just walk down action alley without taking notice to make sure that everything is safe on behalf of other associates and on behalf of other customers in recognition that that is a very busy part of the store. Now, that being said, you cannot, as plaintiff attempts to do, translate that policy, which I just read to the court, into a requirement that Walmart has taken upon itself the duty to assign a monitor to that alley. That is not Illinois law. Judge Posner has issued two opinions for this court, both involving Walmart, and I might add Walmart lost both cases, the Henry case and the Peterson case, but in both instances, Judge Posner, after reviewing Illinois law, said there is no duty, policy, or at common law that requires a retailer to have monitors present in hallways. So that is not the law, and as I've said before, it was not Walmart's policy to assign someone to the hallway continuously to look for these issues. Are these issues that we want to look for when we're strolling down the hallway or fulfilling other duties? Absolutely, and that's why the policy exists as written. Let me turn to another issue, which I think if the court has a question about any questions about the policy, I'll be glad to entertain them. Hearing none, let me move on to the so-called...
What is actually expected of employees under the policy? I mean, if it states that action alley is to be monitored continuously, should there be an employee present there at all times? Is that the only area that's to be monitored continuously?
By way of the policies that have been produced in this case, and I think every safety policy was requested by plaintiff and every safety policy was produced, by way of my review of the record, the only policy that says there must be this continuous monitoring is Action Alley. There are, of course, duties or obligations that Walmart hopes all of its employees will abide by, and that is, you know, let's be careful and let's take note of any type of hazardous situation that may exist in the store. And if such a hazardous situation is discovered, employees are required to stop right there, move no further, and take correct that situation or call for help and remain at the point of hazard until help arrives. All right, in this instance, the argument plaintiff is trying to make is, well, this policy must create constructive notice because Walmart has to have someone constantly present in the hallway. We cannot argue an absence of constructive notice. We had to know because we had to have someone there. Since we didn't have someone there, and everybody agrees to it, no witnesses to the accident, no associates or employees in the aisle, therefore, there must be a violation of policy, and therefore, Walmart must have constructive notice. That is their argument in a nutshell, and as I pointed out, that is not the store's policy, and this court has held on numerous occasions that is not Illinois law with respect to premises liability. Let me just address, if I might, the so-called missing file situation.
Yeah, how do you make sense of the fact that several of the photos can be located, but not, I mean, why would they have been separated from
that? That is because the entire file is not missing. What was not produced and what could not be located was the paper store file in this instance. Photographs, as per Walmart procedure, were taken of the scene of this occurrence. And the photographs corroborate the facts. No tracks, no trails, a plain 2 foot in diameter puddle of water. They did go out and investigate. Also, the accident report itself, as electronically transmitted to Walmart headquarters, was available. Again, corroborating the facts that there's no disagreement about. No witnesses, no associates nearby, no tracks in the puddle, and no trails leading from that refrigerator. There's been a lot of talk about, well, Judge McCuskey should have looked at this and applied the 501 instruction from Illinois IPI. What's very important to note that if you go to the IPI, and once you get into should the court have applied this, I think we're getting away from de novo review, but that is a matter of abuse of discretion with respect to the application of a jury instruction or an evidentiary rule to a given set of facts. Now, that being said, the first line in the comment to 501 is that the court, in order to apply this instruction, must find that the file or evidence would have been produced but for a belief that there were unfavorable contents of the file. In other words, you were withholding something you didn't want the other side to see. Judge McCuskey's opinion goes through this, and he says he cannot imagine what could be in this file that is favorable to the plaintiff, because everyone here acknowledges no witnesses, no associates in the area. There are photographs that show no tracks and no trails. So I believe, and it's my impression, that in order to apply that missing evidence instruction under this circumstance would lead to pure speculation, because we really don't know what could be in there to infer something negative with respect to Walmart. On the other hand, I submit that if this really was a significant concern of the plaintiff, there should have been a motion filed under Rule 37, and Rule 37 gives the trial court the authority to carve out a sanction which includes a negative inference. The first time we heard about the 501 instruction was when it was brought up in the motion and is argued before this court, but it was never brought up before Judge McCuskey, And I submit the proper avenue is Rule 37, and that was never something addressed by the court. In closing, I'd like to stress that the facts, the actual facts of this case, are really not in dispute. Said it several times, if you read through the facts, no witnesses, no associates in the area, and no tracks or trails from that water. So if you apply conventional common law analysis to this case, Judge McCuskey was 100% right in granting summary judgment.
Has either party at any point contested the amount of damages at stake here?
No, the demand going into this was $300,000, and I believe the medical expenses present, not including projected futures, are $93,000. So hopefully you'll acknowledge that the amount in controversy, I believe, has been met.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Olson.
Thank you.
Ms. Wozniak, I think your net time has expired, but you may have 2 minutes.
Thank you for granting me this additional time. I will be as brief as possible and just say that this court really should not allow the defendant to avoid the standard definition of continuously. Their policy doesn't say what the definition of continuously is, which means that we should read into it the standard Webster's definition, which we all know would mean constant and everlasting and without pause or break.
Let me ask you this. Not being totally familiar with all the aisles, is it your position that the high traffic aisles, and since I don't want to take judicial notice, it's inappropriate, but I think some Walmarts Walmart is now the largest grocer or seller of groceries in the country. Is it your position, as Judge Rovner, I think, was driving at, that someone really should be posted in areas, for example, where their vegetables might spill or just because these action alleys have whatever multiple traffic versus the clothing aisles that you spoke. Is that really your position when you say continuously?
No, Your Honor. I think there are ways that you could continuously monitor the action alley, that those main aisles.
Well, let's say
aisles,
somebody made the rounds every 10 minutes. Would that be okay?
Your Honor, under the duty that has been set forth by law, yes, that would clearly, in the case law, analyze every 10 minutes would be sufficient, but we're not talking about the duty that they have. We're talking about how we define what the ordinary care was required in order to determine whether they had noticed. And in looking at that, we should look at their policies, and their policies said continuous. I didn't make that up.
What kind of discovery was done here?
We did request numerous safety policies, and I could elaborate on a lot of other ones. I tried to hone in on the other.
Any attempt to depose those in charge on the dates in question?
Employees of Walmart? I did send a Rule 30B6 notice for my deposition of a representative of the defendant to talk about a list of, I don't know, a page and a half of things that I listed. And they produced George Stewart, who was the manager. He had no independent recollection as to whether he was present that day, and I was informed that there was no official record as to which manager was present that day, and that because there's no file, I don't know which employees were stationed in the surrounding areas. I mean, it would have been the clothing department and the food aisles. I don't know who was there. So, I mean, I was sort of at a loss with regards to the evidence that was available to me. The policies were provided, but there were no individuals with any particular information.
You say you sought the deposition and gained that of the manager?
Yes, Your Honor.
And he was unable to disclose whether he was or was not there that day?
Yes, Your Honor.
And he had no independent knowledge of who was his replacement?
Well, he did list the names of other individuals who might have been there, but said that there was no record, official record of Walmart as to who might have been there. And I did not, as of the point where we were reviewing this motion, I had not sought that deposition of the other individual.
Testimony might have been helpful in kind of focusing on just what kind of care that day it was carried out?
Yes, Your Honor. And if we are allowed to proceed, I would certainly seek that information.
Was Ms. Zupardi's brother deposed? I know he's a minor. I don't know how old he is. Was he deposed?
He was not deposed, Your Honor. He is, I believe, 9 now. And then her son was also president. He's now 3 or something. So we just did not go down that path. It was never requested, so we didn't have to discuss whether it would have been allowed. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks to all counsel. Case taken under advisement.